I call the meeting to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item 3, roll call.
John Steinbrink.
Here.
Monica Yukos.
Here.
Steve Smorkwith.
Here.
Clyde Allen. Excuse Mike Surfee.
Here.
Item 4, citizens' comments. Anybody wishing to speak under citizens' comments? Hearing none, I'll close citizens' comments. Move on to item 5, administrator's report.
Mr. President, I'm going to be requesting that we have a special meeting December 9th, following the Plan Commission to work to take out some questions that they'll be reviewing and that the board would also have final decision-making authority on. And in lieu of that, then, I would request that we would cancel the meeting on December 16th.
16th?
Right. Otherwise, we don't have anything really docketed for the schedule. Everything is kind of...
Do you need a motion to cancel?
Yep.
Move to cancel the meeting on December 16th in favor of a special meeting on December 9th.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Steve. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Bring us to item 6, new business. First item B and item A, consider the award of contract for architectural engineering services for the proposed fire station number 1 project.
President, I'm pulling this up as we speak, but I'll. We've issued an RFP for selection of architectural services for the design of the reconstruction of station number 1. And the project involves two phases. One is, you know, designing the first phase, which is an 8-bay station with living quarters. And then the second phase of the project would take the existing vacated station, redo the floor and the garage doors to make that a meeting room, you know, to make that a usable space for the village to use. We advertised it, and 5 bids were solicited: FGM Architects, 5 Bugles Design, Kluber Architects, Partners in Design, and Plunkett Racich Architects. Next. On November 8th, we conducted an interview committee consisting of me, the fire chief, village engineer, assistant administrator Schursel, interviewed the candidates, and we looked at the proposals. FGM submitted a fee of $374,000, 5 Bugle Design was $310,000, Kluber Architects $354,900, Partners in Design was $365,000, and Plunkett Racich was $270,000. Plunkett Racich, while having the lowest price bid, really submitted the best all-around proposal. We did an evaluation before we disclosed the prices to ourselves, and they were the best. So, consequently, we're recommending that the village board enter into a contract with Plunkett Racich to prepare the architectural plans and designs for a flat fee of $270,000. Reimbursables really involve display boards. It's not significant, as far as it's really making additional copies beyond what was called for in the contract.
Where are they from, Mike?
They're out of Milwaukee, and they're also out of Madison. They've done some fire chief talked to some fire departments. I think it was in Madison or Milwaukee, West Dallas. They've done work for them, and they were happy with their work. Local examples of their work would be at I think United Hospital. They've done some work there. They've done some work in a corporate park, so we're familiar with them as a firm, and they have done very good work. Riley Construction, as our construction manager, is familiar with their work and found them to be very competent in preparing complete and adequate designs. So.
I'd move to concur with the administrator's recommendation for $270,000 awarded to Plunkett and Research.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Steve for adoption. Plunkett Research Architects. Any further discussion?
Yeah, one answer, Chief. Chief, is you went to see some of the buildings that they designed, right?
Yes. Matter of fact,
I've been in several of their firehouses that they've designed. The West Allis, the main station on West Allis, was one of theirs. That's probably the closest. I spoke at length with the Oconomowoc Fire Chief. They're the ones that completed their Station 2, which is in the Pabst Farm development. Very strict covenants that had to match the surrounding buildings in there. And they did a really nice job of incorporating the local style in that development along with the needs of the fire department. And then they've done both Station 11 and 12 in Madison. And they were very pleased with the work that the architects did. There were a few things that were put in at the fire department in the community's request that they weren't happy with. But that wasn't a reflection on the architect. That was the city admitted that was their own wish. Some of the extremely green technologies, like recycling water out of the toilets, things like that. But everyone that we've spoke, all the fire departments we've spoke with are very pleased with them.
Thank you, Chief. You know, it's nice to see that the chief make a research in this, go to see sites designed by this company and satisfy. So, thank you. Good job.
Any further comment or question? If not, we have a motion on the floor. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item B, and that is consider award of contract for the 2014 Village Newsletter, printing and mailing services.
Mr. President, members of the Village Board, I'm here with a recommendation for a vendor for the 2014 printing and mailing services for the Village Newsletter. We solicited bids beginning in October from a pool of area printers, and we also posted our bids out to VendorNet, so it went across the state. And we received, in return, 7 sealed bids, and we received 1 bid that was not considered because it was not sealed. The company that returned the lowest bid is InTech. Their bid is actually lower than the company that's printed for us for the last 3 years, and that was La Crosse Graphics. InTech is also out of La Crosse, and actually the sales rep that bid on the job used to work for La Crosse Graphics, who printed the newsletter for the last 3 years, so he's very familiar with the job. He said some of the other employees at InTech are also familiar with the job, which I guess helps knowing that their bid, that they do understand the project. InTech is actually a commercial side of Inland Printing, which is a pretty large company, and so they get volume discounts on some of their paper purchases, and they also have a half-size press that not all other print vendors have, and that's what enabled them to give us a bid that's about $115 lower than what La Crosse had been doing it for. That'll save us about $1,380 a year on the newsletter printing based on the size of the issues that we have throughout the year. I would recommend approval of InTech for printing for the 2014 newsletter. So moved.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Any further discussion?
Just Chris, you do a beautiful job on a newsletter.
Thank you.
Yes.
You know what? The departments give me a lot of really good stuff to write about, so that's awesome.
Chris, do you know how many people still get it paper versus email?
There are actually the number of people who receive it by paper it's actually going up because some of our residences are now being occupied now that the recession is over. So we're about 7,400 I want to say 7435, but I'm not sure the exact number, that receive it via print, so via the U.S. Postal Mail. Mm-hmm. And then we have, I want to say 1400 that receive it via email. And we still have, on our email, we still have a pretty good open rate for that newsletter and then a really good click-through rate for the people who are opening it. So people are actually reading it. About the same number of people that replied to the survey also open the email version of the newsletter. So the numbers are good. I do have to push more in the upcoming year. Space has been a little bit of a challenge, but I do have to push more on getting more people to sign up for the email newsletter and opt off of the paper mailing list. But I do prefer to passively put this in front of people so that they'll actually read it and understand what we're doing with their tax dollars.
It's a great tool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Jen.
Mike?
You know, just a thought. If we offer some incentive to sign up for emails, and just as a thought now, I'm not recommending we do this, but maybe a day pass at the Recplex. And what that could do, maybe the people that don't belong take a day pass. They might like what they see, what they do, and we might get a membership out of them. It's just a marketing tool. It's just something to think about.
That's something we can think about. Awesome.
Like that, huh, Chris?
Look at Carol over there.
Carol's smiling.
Carol, look at Carol.
Awesome. Any other questions?
Thank you. Thank Excellent.
You. We have a motion and a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item C, consider ordinance 13-54 to amend Chapter 242 of the Municipal Code relating to Recplex program and service fees.
Mr. President and board members, I'd like to take you through the slide presentation. There's quite a bit of background behind this ordinance change. So in August of last year, we had a consultant come in to help us with our personal training and boost our personal training. The resounding recommendation that we got returned from them was that our fitness division was entirely too complicated for members and staff alike. So we went through many discussions and contacted staff and members, and so we are presenting this ordinance change to remove the barriers between members and fitness. So we're going to go all in. It's going to be free group fitness for members. So what that looks like is all memberships will have access to group fitness classes at any level. So experience, exercise, or excellence. We get 55 to 60 free classes per week. So all the Les Mills classes, all the popular classes, the ones that are now getting charged for. Because we have some that are free and some that aren't free, and it's very confusing for members, guests, and staff. So in that, we're going to give away all group fitness classes to all members. We'll look at our minimums, and currently it's four-person minimum, or the class is going to be canceled, but we may raise that a little bit depending on the class, and we'll run these classes monthly instead of by session so we can update our schedule to reflect any changes we need to make. What this does is it adds value to our membership. Currently, there's about 16 different ways to attend a membership class. No pun intended. There's a lot of ways to go. You can get a passport or drop-in pass or sign up for registration or be an exercise member. So what we're going to do is going to have no non-member registration, no drop-ins, no passports, and non-members may attend group fitness classes just by buying a day pass. It makes it so much more simple. Currently, they can buy the drop-in. It's a dollar less than a day pass. The Mind and Body series, which is the yoga and Pilates, these instructors have a smaller group to work with and are much more certified than the group fitness trainer. So there'll still be a charge for yoga classes. This, once again, will go to a monthly schedule instead of a session schedule, and the fees will be $28 per month. The aquatic fitness classes are attended by members and non-members alike, and so we talked to staff, and they really didn't want to have a big change concerning these classes. So we are going to move those to the aquatics division, but they'll run the same. So they'll run per session, And the member prices will remain the same as they are now, and the non-member prices are going to go up a little bit. But once again, to get rid of the confusion, there's not going to be drop-ins or series sales or passports. So you either register for the class or you don't register for the class. Again, adds value to membership. This is one of the key things that's going to help boost our personal training. It's the trainer-led classes. It's pretty simple. Any class that's led by a trainer is a trainer-led class, and there'll be 8 to 12 participants currently, free motion classes, TRX classes, circuit training. These are our trainer-led classes now that are really misnamed by being in the specialty fitness because they're a much higher level than a group fitness class. So the personal trainers will work with these small groups of people and build a relationship with them, and it will help boost our one-on-one personal training sessions. These classes are also offered monthly. The first class would be $43. If you sign up for a second class, there would be a $10 discount. A third class, another $10 discount. We do this currently with our ICE program so that our guest services can handle this for people who register at the desk. All these classes are going to be included in the exercise membership level. So even if you're an exercise member or experienced member, you must register for the class. Currently, some of our exercise members don't have to register for class. So they get to a class, and it's taken up by the people who register, or they get there early to get people hanging on to their equipment. So this will help us manage our fitness classes in a much better way. So the exercise membership will include all the classes. The water classes, the yoga classes, the signature series trainer-led classes will also move from the excellence level. It'll include free tanning, the free kids court, free parking. It'll be $50 per month instead of $35 per month, but they're getting much more than they are currently. The excellence upgrade was introduced last year, and it was always supposed to be an upgrade for personal training. So now the excellence upgrade is going to be a commitment to personal training either one time a week or two times a week, and they'll get a significant price break for either one of those. If you're an experienced member or an exercise member, you can do the excellence upgrade and do personal training. Personal training, we used to have about 32 different price points for personal training. So we're going to simplify personal training. 8 sessions, $54, 16 sessions, $51 each. There'll be a 3-for-$119 as an introductory offer, one time only. And we'll still have partner training or buddy training. But usually when people do this, it's you know, friends or it's spouses. So, I mean, it'll be available, but it's not something that strangers get together to do buddy training. So it'll be available. It won't be overly advertised. So the financials. So at the end of this year, the group fitness, by giving them away free for members, will lose $62,000. With the introduction to the fees for these classes, the aqua classes, the yoga classes, and the trainer lads, will have an increase of $20,000 in revenue. Because there will be no drop-ins or passports, we're going to have a day pass increase. We're going to reduce the free classes we offer now because we offer about 125 classes now. Several of them have very low or no attendance. So those classes are going to be reduced, and there'll be obviously a savings, cost savings in personnel. We'll attract early bird and online savings. That'll be about $5,000. So to break even for these free fitness classes, we need to bring in 10 new members. So it should be a fairly easy proposition. We currently have about 180 exercise and excellence members out of our 5,000, you know, primary members. So we're going to offer them the current exercise upgrade at 45 instead of 50. So just $10 more a month for them. And, you know, we're expecting at least 50 upgrades at that level. We're meeting with them this week. And then given that, we need 66 new memberships just to break even. So now we're at 76 new memberships just to break even to give away free group fitness classes. So that's very conservative, saying how we're going to have a break-even scenario. I only have 50 of the exercise members to upgrade in here. We have no excellence members figured in here. And the new pay structure for the trainer-led classes and yoga should bring in more than $20,000. And this is also the springboard for us to grow our personal training, which is really the goal behind all this fitness simplification. Last January, we did over 250 memberships. With this fitness simplification, we believe we'll be able to retain members and not only make the 76 new members we need in 1 month, but we'll exceed that. I don't know if anyone saw the current Black Friday ads that we just ran on the radio. In the last 3 days, we gained 123 new primary memberships in 3 days. So we expect the same type, actually more than that, on January 1st. We're going to do another big promotion for January 1st. So this move will help us get to this level of 5,200 memberships. Given that, the increase of membership revenue will be a minimum of 75,000, and the increase of personal training in this format will be a minimum of 50,000. So this ordinance change should have a minimum projected income of 125,000 for 2014. We have the marketing in place. We're ready to go. So, we're waiting for this approval so we can begin marketing to our members and the general public, as well as train our staff. With that being said, the RecPlex staff recommends approval of the ordinance change 13-54.
Mike?
Chris, a couple questions for you. You obviously work with consultants on this, and this is where this all comes
from. Yes.
And these people work the industry, and they know pretty much what the industries are charging, or what the companies are charging, right?
Yes, they do. They're very they work for Athletic, but they own their own company, first of all, Elevations, in Pennsylvania, and they work for they consult with Athletic Business, and Carol and I both saw them a couple times at Athletic Business Conference. We knew what they said made sense, and so we brought them in, and they helped us with these recommendations.
And if we pass this tonight, implementation is when?
January 1st. Yes.
Okay.
Chris, what is the day pass going up to? Have you decided?
It's 10 for village residents. Mm-hmm. It's not increasing.
Okay.
It's 10 for village residents and guest of members, and 14 for non-residents. That's right. Been the same for the last 2 years now.
Okay. We did a micro version of this last year, where we had opened up some of the classes to be free to members. And it took off really well, and the first thing that was evident is there was a lot more utilization, and our retention was a lot better. So the more and when we did the master plan for the rec department 2 years ago, and we surveyed members, and one of the things that people wanted most was they wanted more free classes. They wanted free classes, period, not more. Wanted free classes, they didn't want to pay anymore, and which is just like life. But we eased into it because program revenues were a big source of income, but it really turned out well. And I think finding a way to boost fitness. I mean, we want to do it because we want to make itself keep itself sustaining. But at the end of the day, if the rec department's mission is to the health and vitality of the community, and the more people are doing this, that we're really achieving two goals. It's one to have revenue, but we're also having a positive impact on a lot of lives. And this, we brought consultants in. It was clear that the small step we took on our own last year, followed up with a strategy to do this, I think it's going to be really good. I think people are going to be a lot happier with it. And it's going to be, administratively, it's going to be a lot easier to administer, and it's not going to have all the nuances that our current rate structure has.
We also have one ancillary improvement that we weren't really expecting. And so many people are now taking the free classes that the fitness center is less crowded, and the machinery and all the equipment is getting less use because they're now going to the classes rather than just using the fitness center. So it's really helped in the fitness center area also. and we just expect that to become even greater as we implement these changes.
I'll make a motion to approve Ordinance 13-54.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Mike for adoption of Ordinance 13-54. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item D, and that's consider Ordinance 13-55 to amend Chapter 180 of the Municipal Code relating to fire and rescue fees.
Mr. President and members of the board, we've got a few changes, mostly geared towards our fees, but there's a couple of slight language changes within this. The first language change, if you saw in your packet, referenced the ambulance fees that we would charge outlying areas and areas that we actually have mutual aid contracts for. When this standard was, when this ordinance was written originally, the most of the municipalities didn't charge their residents or employees of their businesses in their municipality. They only charged non-residents, which is pretty which is similar to what we had. This has changed. The last community that I know of in Kenosha County that didn't charge their own residents was the town of Paris, and they're now looking at charging. So what we wanted to do was simply clean up the language here and just say that we're going to charge consistently with the applicable mutual aid agreement that we have. And what that agreement is with most communities is if they charge a resident, so do we if we go there. So that would be the change. And then just a $200 across-the-board rate increase on each of the base rates for both resident and non-resident. And there still is a $100 discount given to residents. So no matter what the fee is, it's always $100 cheaper if you're a resident. So that would be the changes for the ambulance service rates. And then do you have any, if you want, I can go through both of these things and then ask questions, or if you'd prefer to ask to deal with this first and then move on to permits.
Okay. Any questions?
No. Okay. And then the second thing then is the permits. We want to more accurately reflect what it is, so when people do a search on the web or a search in our website or in our code, it's not only fire sprinkler fees, but it's actually fire protection systems. It's sprinklers, alarms, and tanks. So that would be the reason for the name change. And then we're just doing a straight across-the-board increase of 20% for all of our fire alarm, fire sprinkler, special permit, like hood systems, and specialized fire protection system fees. Then one thing we did see, there were some areas in the code that we charge $105 an hour, and some we charge $110. We just standardized at $110. And then the reason for these changes is to reflect the actual cost that it does, that it, that the village experiences in paying our outside consultant, the diesel fuel, the personnel costs, and the equipment costs to actually go out and do the actual on-site inspections for each of these types of systems. And if you have any questions, I could answer them.
Any questions?
Doug, these are pretty consistent with other communities our size, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, if you're going to compare costs, we have to be certain we're not comparing our costs to Summers or I mean, a lot of this is driven by, well, one, we need to make sure we recover our expenses, because these are services we're typically providing to somebody who's wanting to get a service here or do something. But state statutes were changed last year where the village's fees and permits have to reflect our actual cost. So, for fire, it's, not only have paying our professionals to go out and do the work, but we also have to have, in this case, an outside mechanical engineer who's doing that professional review of sprinkler systems, and so we're recovering that expense. So, there was a time where some of those costs were subsidized, you help development along or whatever, but now under that new statute, fees are fees are fees, and whatever it is what the charge is going to be. So, and to be in compliance with that, we need to make that change.
Motion to approve Ordinance 13-55.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Any further discussion? Chief, the one question we always hear, I hear sometimes, is, you know, I pay taxes, but you guys came out and you saved somebody's life, but we still had to, somebody has to move. And, you know, you sent me a bill, I'll come. And I try to explain to them, you know, the insurance, everything else, the process, the billing. Can you just give us a quick overview of that?
You've literally hit it right on the head. The Fire and Rescue Department budget has been offset for quite a few years now on ambulance revenue that we bring in. The decision was made to charge, first of all, non-residents and then all village residents also, because the vast majority of our village residents do have insurance or Medicare. As a result, that you know they're not getting a discount on their insurance because we're not charging for ambulance service. So we're able to bill the insurance company or able to bill Medicare, bring that in, and that directly offset the levy, the amount of levy money that had to go towards the fire department. This year we anticipate bringing in about $390,000 in rescue. And the vast majority of that is coming from private pay insurance and Medicare. So it's actually split about one-third, one-third, one-third. One-third that would be Medicare, one-third private pay insurance, and one-third where they actually bill the patient, but then generally they then pass it on to their insurance company. And the way that we actually adopted what we call a soft billing practice last year for residents when we did raise the rates, the base rates a year ago to this month, we're able to, you know, not, you know, aggressively go after village residents that maybe their insurance or that were private payer, their insurance, you know, company didn't pay the entire base rate. Medicare doesn't pay, they have a set fee. That's all they're going to pay. And no matter what it is, we can charge, you know, if we charge less, they'll pay us less. But if we charge more, they'll only pay, you know, like $580 for an ALS call, period. That's all we're going to, and they only actually pay 80%. So you hear about the Medigap insurance, they pay that additional 20%. But we're not allowed to charge Medicare patients any more than that. So
the other thing that we noticed when we, you know, back when we analyzed the nature of our calls, you know, we're a community where we have a lot of transient people that are moving through the community. So to the extent that you say, well, let's just have the property tax pay for it, you know, because I paid property taxes, that should pay for everything. There's a big segment of people who are using our services that don't pay property taxes here, that we end up paying for their services that they get here, and they're hard to track down. Well, this way, you know, if they pick up somebody who gets in an accident on 31, or you know they're in the park and they get sick and we take them in, you know, they, you know, we're going to get their insurance information and we're going to proceed and bill them, especially if they're in Illinois or another state. That way the village taxpayers aren't subsidizing people who are not village residents, not even state residents, you know, that get that service. And, you know, our daytime population is greater than our nighttime population. So there's more people in the village during the day than there is at night. We're not a bedroom community. And to the extent that we decide to have free services, we're providing free services to people that are on their way through the community or coming here for something and then leaving at the end of the day. So at the time we started that service, it made sense, or we started this charge, it made sense to rather than charge the village taxpayers for that added exposure, just charge everybody that uses the service, and it's based on, you know, what you use is what you pay for.
Maybe if I could put some numbers to that. Year to date, our total, what they call net charges, because they're, you know, certain insurance company charge, you know, dealing with different insurance companies, certain charges get written down and everything. We've charged out about $183,000, a little over that, to non-residents, and out of that, we've collected $138,900. That's pretty significant.
Yeah. And I think people have to realize that over the years, the level of service we provide has changed. The way we get reimbursed, you know, you guys used to go to the hospital and they fill you back up with goodies and you're ready to go again, and that doesn't happen anymore.
We buy all of our own supplies. We're not allowed to restock anything at the hospital unless we specifically pay for it. We've got to go out and get our own DEA license number. We own all of our medications. Some of those drugs are extremely expensive. $100 a, literally $100 a dose. Yeah. And they don't have a long shelf life on them. You just approved a couple meetings ago here, you approved an ambulance, $240,000 for an ambulance. New heart monitor used to be, when we started all this, heart monitor did two things. It monitored the heart rate, and it was able to defibrillate a patient. Our heart monitors now are able to pace a patient like you'd have an internal pacemaker. This is an external pacemaker. We can measure the blood oxygen saturation level, and we can even measure the amount of carbon dioxide you breathe out, which is actually even a greater indicator of what's going on with the body, even more so than oxygen saturation. And there's just more and more and more things coming out. As we get these new advanced protocols, we're able to do more, but we need the diagnostics to be able to make sure that what we're doing is right for the patient. And all of that costs money.
Definitely.
It almost makes you want to get sick.
Okay, thank you, Chief. Any other questions? If not, we have a motion and a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item E, consider resolution 13-27 relating to an amendment to the 2013 budget.
So this amendment is to the 2013 budget. Anything that moves dollars between revenue and expense within general government needs the board approval, as well as my review and Mike's review. This one's being brought forward by Fire and Rescue. Their fire department permits have increased in terms of the amount of revenue they're bringing in by more than $55,000, but they have $55,000 increase in that area to be able to cover the increase in expenses, which are related to this increase in revenue. Fire sprinkler plan review brings in revenue, but also has an expense associated with it. So we need to increase both the revenue and the expense to match what we're actually doing this year. And also another item that brings in revenue but also cost us is in the minor equipment area when we sell Knox boxes. So I'm asking for a transfer between revenue and expense to cover the expenses due to the increase in revenue. It offsets the increase in expenses.
Move approval of 1327.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Monica. Any discussion on this item? If not, thank you, Kathy. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item F, and that's consider an amendment to the Village of Pleasant Prairie Employee Handbook to update the vacation policy for part-time employees.
Mr. President, members of the board, the amendment that you have before you is going to, first of all, allow the managers and payroll to streamline the process with our new tracking software that we're going to be implementing. And it also puts us in line with more of the local employers and how they handle their part-time employees. We will be still offering a part-time vacation accrual for the employees in the eligible job categories, which is what you see on your screen there. It's basically the employees that work 25 hours and they have a regular schedule. And they will still accrue vacation hours based on their years of service and either, you know, 1 year, 3 years, and 7 years the same. And then it goes on the same track that full-time employees go. This is just going to allow us to keep employees in some jobs that is difficult to find employees right now, and it will also help us manage some of the part-time employees that, like lifeguards and childcare that really don't work that many hours, and it just becomes a really hard time to try to track them. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'm asking that you approve this amendment.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Any comment or question? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item G, consider renewal of mobile home park licenses.
As every time this year, we have the renewals of the four mobile home park licenses in the village, which are City View Mobile Home Park at 4303 75th Street, Westwood Mobile Home Park at 7801 88th Avenue, the Timber Ridge Mobile Home Park at 1817 104th Street, and Scotty's Mobile Home Park at 5310 75th Street. The applicants have filed all the required paperwork and fees. Attached to the memo were inspection reports for a combined report from the Community Development Department and the Building Inspection Department. The City View Mobile Home Park and the Timber Ridge Mobile Home Park have no violations, but there are some violations noted by Gene and Ralph with respect to minor violations at Westwood, but quite a few violations at Scotty's Mobile Home Park. So maybe Gene can address those. There was an email that I placed, a copy of an email I placed at your laptops that came from Mr. Ruffalo this morning regarding Scotty's. So, like I said, maybe Gene can address those issues. Westwood, again, is minor, and I'm sure those can be taken care of, but Scotty's is a different matter once again.
In doing our inspections in November for the mobile home parks, Westwood Estates was one mobile home park that we did find two recent violations. One, recent winds this past fall knocked down their fence enclosure surrounding their equipment and maintenance area at the very northeast corner of the mobile home park. And then we noticed at the very south end there were piles of gravel and concrete, and I'm not sure if they put them there or if locals might have been using it, because it looks to be a pretty favorite spot for everything from skateboards to some bikes. I spoke with the new owner last week, Monday, and she indicated to me that she was going to speak with the manager and maintenance staff at Westwood, and they would have it taken care of immediately. They weren't sure exactly what the process was, and I indicated to them that I would go back out there this week, but my understanding was if the weather permitted, they were going to get out there as soon as possible and get these two matters taken care of for us. With respect to both City View and Timber Ridge, they had a few items, each of them, but they both corrected those items before the memo even went to the village clerk. With respect to Scotty's, there were probably about 12 different violations out at that mobile home park, some of which have since been corrected in pursuant to an email that I did receive from the park owner. Lots 1 and 10 were missing their numbers, and he indicated to me, Mr. Ruffalo indicated to me that the numbers are on. I have not been out there yet to check that. Lot 13, which is in the south center part of the park, it had a number of issues with respect to boarded up windows and siding, and last year we were dealing with an illegal porch and railings and different things, and most of those had been corrected, but it looks like things have just gotten worse with respect to this number, lot 13, on lot 13. And Ms. Ruffalo indicated that they are going to remove all that brick siding, that fake brick paneling on the side of the unit, and that they were going to be residing it and they were going to be taking care of it so it could be livable again. Didn't really look like anybody had been living in it for quite a while, but that was the response that we had gotten. Lot 15 unit was a whole different story, and we took a number of photos, which you have on your computers. It was open to the public, and it was just it had been severely damaged by whoever had been in there. It's been damaged. That's all I can say. That it's beyond recognition. At one point, he was working with someone that wanted to take it, renovate it, and bring it up north for a hunting trailer. And what I explained to them is that it's well beyond that, and they need to probably remove the fence in the back and pull it out from the north, and then get rid of it. And they could demo it. They actually have vacant property that they could demo it or pull it apart, because it is kind of close to the units on either side. But this lot 15 unit does need to be removed from the park. Then we did have some issues again on lot 19. Someone had broken the windows on lot 27. Again, we're still having some issues with this one. He tried to renovate it last time. There is someone living in it, but again, you can see that there's no hand railings and the skirting's missing and there's broken windows, but he said someone's living in that one as well. So, again, those matters need to be corrected as well. Again, I have not been out there today, and I'm sure that Ralph hasn't been out there today to remove some of the other minor violations were junk and debris, but those had all been, that junk and debris has been removed from the park since I talked to the owner. So Again, I think our biggest concerns are lots 13, 15, 19, and 27.
Mike.
I got a call from Mr. Ruffalo today, and he has taken care of all the mentioned items except for lot 15, which he said he will remove from the park. But he's thinking about now, because of the ground being frozen and having a hard time taking the fence out, that he might just scrap it out on site, if that's possible. I don't know if that is or not. So I don't know if that's going to be acceptable or not.
I'm not sure. I mean, the units, it's in the very northwest corner, so it's pretty tight. I don't know if I have a picture of that, but it's the next unit is right there, and the other one is right there within 5 feet on either side. So I'm not sure if they might be able to do it, but it's tight quarters to do it as opposed to pulling it out through the back.
He's agreed with you on everything you've cited, and he's made the corrections, and he agrees that 15 has to go. So he just... But he's asking for some time to get rid of it.
Actually, now would be the time to pull it out through the back. I mean, he'd be farther ahead just to get a sawzall and cut that fence out and then drag it out there while the soil's frozen.
The ground isn't that frozen, though.
Yeah.
So he shouldn't have trouble moving the fence either. So.
Right. Either way, I mean, it just...
And it all depends what kind of glue you're using on the sides. You could...
Right.
Get it apart easier.
Yeah.
Well, part of the problem is you really can't pull it out through the front. It really has to be disassembled if they're going to pull it through.
It is a property anyway, the north side.
It is.
Yeah. It's 73.
The tree,
well, my question is...
The tree removed also. There was an issue of a tree.
Yeah. My question is his statement that he's going to get rid of 15 acceptable to us?
Well, the question is given a limit how far he can go, you know. Such a day, got to be out, and that's it.
Four of these mobile home park or units had similar things 2 years ago that haven't been taken care of.
That was my next question to Jean, is how many of these are repeat offenders?
That's 1, 10, 13, and 27. On the list 2 years ago. But we also, the board approved a six-month license rather than the year license, and then we brought it back to the board in June for your consideration to give him the rest of the year. But obviously some of those have not been taken care of.
Like I look at Unit 13, all siding has been removed. They will be siding it as funds are available to them.
Okay, I think Mr. Ruffalo has indicated he made some corrections here. Do we know how far the corrections have gone?
And he's asking, far as numbers being put on?
As far as whatever Jean listed on her list of complaints. How many of them have been taken care of? We don't know. And the one he's asking for time on that he says the only one left to do is 15.
And 13.
15. 13 he's reciting.
Yep.
When they have funds available.
Well, it put a time limit on it.
I would recommend not giving them the license for an entire year because that's the only, it's pretty good leverage when you're dealing with a repeat offender, actually. So if it was my recommendation, as we did 2 years ago, would be set a time, issue the license for that, and then bring it back to see how much he's actually had done.
You know, I agree with you.
I just, a year license, and we're going to end up the same way we were 2 years ago, because some of these are still coming back.
And if we were to give him a six-month extension with weather, that would give him plenty of time to ensure that all of these corrections are made.
That was your decision last time.
If the siding's removed, what's exposed now with rain coming and snow? Is it tarped? Is it?
I don't know.
There's wood on the window.
Yeah. It's a cover of a broken window.
And someone lives in lot 13.
That was not evident.
I don't think it's occupant.
Owner relative will be residing in it.
I'm moving in.
And moving in. So someone will be living in there in that condition.
That's his intent, yes. put a time element on it and force them to make a quick move.
I would like to give him 3 months, but I don't know if the weather would cooperate, and that's not fair to him. I'm willing to make a motion to give Mr. Ruffalo 6 months to get these corrections made.
You can't go 6 months on this. It has to be done before that.
Are you asking to give him 6 months to get him taken care of, or are you asking a six-month extension on his license?
6 months to get the corrections made.
His license expires December 31st of this year.
So he would have till June 30th.
Yeah, for renewal, that's right.
You're approving his license until June 30th.
Yeah, 6 months.
Right, is that what you want?
I'm hearing a couple of different things.
You're saying his license is good until December 31st.
Of this year.
This year.
It's up to the board to decide how long they want to give him a license for next year. It can be 2 months, it can be 3 months, it can be 8 months. I'm just saying I don't think you should give the entire year like you did 2 years ago.
Well, everything should be corrected by December 31st if you're going to go into the next year.
But if you're willing to give him time, just give him some time if you want, and then we'll issue the license for a specific time period and then bring it back to the board before that time period expires like we did 2 years ago.
So you could you could grant his license for a year if he corrects everything before December 31st. If he doesn't, then...
I'm just saying, these repairs can't take 6 months to do. They need to be done a lot quicker.
Yep.
And how long is Mr. Ruffalo going to be in Florida? Did he indicate to you how long?
This is livelihood, and I'm sure he'll cut it short. I don't know. I didn't know he was going to Florida.
What did he say the process was for scrapping one out? You have to get a hold of somebody, and it's basically just tearing them apart and
right.
Get a dumpster in there and fill it.
Right. I mean, we've known that he's had a difficult time for whatever reason, and there's always a reason for not getting this thing done. And we're a little more hamstrung to deal with him than we would never put up with this in a single family home in a neighborhood. We issue raising orders for things less than this.
Yep.
So, if you want to say he has to get it done to be in compliance with his license now, and then, it's just a matter of applying resources to the problem and getting it done. It's not. Either way, he's kind of made his own problem, because this isn't a new problem. This is just a continuation of the old one, with the same response, which is give me more time because whatever the reason. So it's just.
Well, if we take him at his word that the corrections have been made, we'd have to check on that to be sure.
Right.
We tell him that no matter what happens, 15 has to go. Quick. And it's got to go before the end of the year. That's 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
Staff can take it and we can do an examination of it. We'll be meeting again next week and see what's done. And then you can craft, what you want to do as far as if he has till the rest of the year to move those other homes out or do repairs. But I agree with John. I think, if you're going to take siding off of a dwelling in the middle of winter, you're going to expose that dwelling to the elements.
Yep.
I don't care if you have tar paper, it's still not going to protect it.
Insulation is going to be gone, too.
I don't even think the building code will let somebody do that. You're exposing your wiring to the weather. It doesn't make any sense to say I'll do it when I can afford it.
His biggest problems are 15 and 13.
Well, the real problem is he's not doing this. The neighbor's doing it. So apparently they own both of these units, because I don't think he owns the units.
Right, but under statute, he's got the responsibility to make sure that those units are compliant with the code. So, we don't have a direct route to the people that own the unit. We have a direct route with the park
owner. That's right.
So pay-as-you-go isn't going to cut it here.
Right.
Yeah, we got experience with that. So
I think you can get rid of him in 4 weeks. 15. In 13, he says he's going to board up or re-side. Let him do it.
So why don't we just extend this till our first meeting in January and see where Mr. Ruffalo is as far as giving him his license? Why not give him...
His license will expire December 31st, so you... I mean, if you're going to give him any time, you got to give him a time definite to get past December 31st into January. So,
do we meet again in December?
No, just next week.
Next Monday.
Next Monday, the 9th, is the last meeting.
We'll see what progress is made then.
You want to table this until next Monday?
I table the recommendation that, you know, he needs to come into compliance with his existing permit. You know, and that means getting rid of 15, and we're not gonna let a mobile home be unsided through the winter. I mean, if he needs to take the siding off and get it resided, you know, if he's in fact gonna do that. If not,
that would give staff an opportunity to go back out and see what he's actually
doing. And that's on lot 13 that he has to reside. He can't board it up.
Well, I mean, if he chooses to reside it by boarding it up, but I mean, it's gotta meet the state code, which.
Well, the 13 has to be fixed pretty quick, or that goes scrap too.
Right.
Yeah.
And everything scrap is out by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to have to be a week before the end of the year because, like you said, it expires December 31st.
I'm assuming when you look at 13, the boards on the outside are warped. I'm assuming that the studs are warped. I mean
that's the insulation.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll make a motion that we table.
Second.
Mr. Ruffalo's license renewal.
And approve the other three?
And approve the other three as stated.
Yes.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Any further discussion? If not, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item H, the consent agenda. Items 1 and 2, operator license applications, and the two-year appointments of election inspectors.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to board comments.
I have one.
Monica?
Mr. President, I've received a few phone calls from different homeowners associations in the village regarding pond maintenance. There seems to be a lot of confusion as to what has to be maintained, how do they go about maintaining it. And we had this issue a while back with Bence Estates, if you remember, they came and there was some misunderstanding as to the requirements and what has to be made. I'm asking that because of the depth of the dredging, sometimes these ponds are a little bit over people's heads as to what needs to be done as far as maintenance. I'd like to ask that the village do a study as to what it would cost for the Clean Water Utility to maybe look at doing the maintenance on the ponds themselves and directing staff to do so and bring it forward at a meeting in the near future, to give us some idea if that's even feasible. Because I know if I'm getting phone calls, I'm sure staff is as well, and there just isn't a lot of resources out there for them as to how to maintain the ponds.
Okay.
John, is that something you'd be able to do within the next 6 weeks or so?
Yes, it is. We should be able to accomplish that with no problem. Right now, the Clean Water Utility does an analysis on each of the ponds on a five-year rotation just to verify the depth of the sediment, and then we compare it to what the constructed depth was. And so we kind of, after a couple cycles, we'll really have a good gauge of where it is. And I do agree with you 100% that it really is over the homeowner association's heads to take care of the dredging and the pipes and stuff like that. I guess as staff, I would recommend that they still keep the responsibility of the cutting the grass, mulching the trees, you know, doing that stuff, and fertilizing irrigation. But Public Works, we do have the equipment and the knowledge and the know-how to complete a lot of this work in-house as it needs to be done, and we'll know when each of the ones need to get done because we're doing this analysis. And I guess just for clarification, are you just looking at it as a for the residential ponds? Because we have the equipment and we've been doing the work on the residential ponds. The ones that are the commercial are, and the industrial ponds are much larger ponds that would probably be pretty hard to do.
Just residential, not commercial.
Okay.
The right, residents are the ones that have contacted.
Yeah, we definitely do have that, so I can put something together and probably have it for a meeting in January for you.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mike.
Chief Smetana, how do we do on Black Friday? Black whatever.
We don't want to know if you got something on sale.
I did fine. I've got my list right here. We did fine. We were set up with four officers out on site in the premium outlet area. We had another arrangement with the area up by Target. We had just brought our parking enforcement officer on duty that week. So it was an early assignment for him, kind of an eye-opener. From my understanding, speaking with the officers on site, the parking really wasn't an issue. The adjusted time, the earlier start time, kind of let people come in. There was no mad crush to get in. From my understanding, there were very few traffic problems. There were some parking citations issued on site as normal. That's why we had our parking enforcement on hand. I think we had three arrests out there, three shoplifting arrests right on site during those hours. So it went very well.
Good. Good to hear.
Thank you, Chief.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Monica for adjournment. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries.